Welcome back, and we're in this amazing, amazing time of the year called summer. And we thought at the Chasing Elephants podcast that we would sit down with one of the amazing guests who is speaking at our Student Leadership University 101 conference each week this summer. By the way, got a full summer. It's amazing. In fact, I'm recording this towards the end of our very first week of SLU 101. And Taylor, it was pretty awesome to have a full room. It was pretty awesome to see people without masks on.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you're still wearing masks, it's okay. God bless you. God bless America. God bless everybody. But I'm just saying it was nice to not it be to be in a mask optional room. Right?
Exactly, exactly. It was the energy is just so different.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a relief almost when you just walk in, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
This feels good to be back.
Yeah, we're back. Let's either all get it together or just move forward together. That's mm-hmm. what's gonna happen.
Yep.
And so mask, tan lines and all, we move forward this week. It was so much fun. And what we decided to do is to go through what we're calling a leadership perspective series, where we have a sit down kind of backstage conversation with some amazing people. And so today we've got a very good friend of mine, Ben Trueblood, who I'm going to introduce him a little bit, but some of what he's doing is going to come out in our conversation as well. He oversees, and this is my way of interpreting it, he is the Jedi Knight or Yoda of all youth ministry things at Lifeway Students. I know that's not your official title.
That would be amazing.
Do you think that could get passed on the floor of the Southern Baptist Convention?
I don't know if I've earned the Yoda title, but it's definitely better than director.
Director.
It's better than director.
That's right. So, Ben, you oversee all of the, there's all the programs in which you guys have the largest camping ministry in the world. When it comes to resources by way of curriculums and small group studies and things like that, largest producer of content in the world that's serving student ministries. Am I missing anything? I mean, that's pretty much the whole gamut, isn't it?
Yeah, we have, the training component of what we do.
Yes.
With student pastors around the country and Youth Ministry Booster and kind of trying to facilitate relationships.
And that's the newer aspect.
Yeah, it's a newer aspect of it, for sure.
Let me tell you something. We have platformed and really tried to encourage at all our youth pastor summits that everybody involved get plugged up and become a member of Youth Ministry Booster. So if you haven't and you're a youth worker or a youth pastor, Youth Ministry Booster is an amazing kind of, what I love about it is it's an amazing ongoing resource in your life. It's a relationship. Resource almost doesn't feel like the right word. It's a relationship.
It really is. Our goal is to facilitate relationships between student pastors for health and longevity in ministry. That's what it's built to do.
So. Yep. So needed too. That's awesome.
Well, Ben, let's start with this, right? Like, this is probably not a fair question, but an easy question at the same time. Like, just kind of introduce yourself a little bit. Give the Wikipedia version of, and I know we had you on, but it was a little bit over a year ago. I just want to kind of introduce yourself a little bit. Tell people that you're a little bit more than just Lifeway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, married, 4 kids.
Yeah.
We have 2 teenagers in the home. So, and I am constantly reminded that parenting teenagers is way different than pastoring them.
Yes, it is.
Amen.
I'm in the line of the day.
That same season. Amen.
It's crazy. And so I was a student pastor before going to Lifeway and local churches for 14 years and been connected to student ministry for now more than 20, been at Lifeway for 9, St. Louis Cardinals fan.
That's what I was about to ask you. What's the best baseball team? Is Ozzie Smith the greatest shortstop of all time?
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, he is. In my opinion.
Yeah, of course.
And because your humble and accurate opinion. Yeah.
Because he wore the jersey. Right. That only, ensures that was the truth. Yes. There's no bias there. That's like me saying, I really believe the Atlanta Falcons are awesome, even though we're just that team full of potential that is never fulfilled. Ozzie, never mind. Ozzie Smith obviously was known as the Wizard, if you don't know sports history, and he was. If he's not the greatest, he's in the top 5 greatest of all stops in the history of the game. Well, cool. All right. And what's your favorite? If you had a hobby, what's your to do? You got a hobby. You got a free day. You got a whatever. What's your favorite hobby?
I like outdoor stuff. So I'll go hunt or fish or hang out in the outdoors. I enjoy that. But the caveat there is I don't like it super hot.
Yeah. Mm.
So if it's summer, it's fishing in the morning.
Yeah.
I don't get into the hunting early fall where it like, I'm going to wear a short sleeve shirt to go hunt.
Yeah.
That's, I'm not that
I do. Yeah. So. I get that. I grew up in the South, so went hunting as well.
Yeah.
And it was.
You hunted?
I did.
Hold on. Whoa. This is, I'm going along with this.
Like Taylor right
yeah.
now. This
I
is
did.
Great.
What did you hunt?
Well, I just, wherever dad was going, I would just go with him. So deer, quail. Quail was my favorite to go. And still is. I love going quail hunting.
I can see that. You get to walk.
Yes. And engage. I would get to ride on the horses. So it was normally more fun and entertaining for me. I didn't have to be quiet because dad would normally have to bring a lot of snacks, you know, like deer in the deer stand. Cause I just, you know, I'd want to whisper and like all these things. Literally. So, but quail hunting was probably my favorite. I've been turkey hunting. It's just, it's harder, you know, and it's, but that's, I feel like for a person who really likes to hunt, that's normally, I feel like one of the favorites cause it's just the reward is bigger, you know, in that sense. But I would just, you know, kind of get bored of that. But yeah, I went hunting. It was a great time. But one of the things about that though is just the crisp morning when you're out there and it being colder, that just feels right rather than going out and it being
totally
squelching hot. Like it's, you know, I'm like, I'll wait a month or so.
Yeah.
Wait a month
or so. You don't want like, you want it to be cold enough where you know ticks and all that kind of stuff is like done
snakes.
For the year. And yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. You know, I'm sitting here and it's like listening to a foreign language. I was not much of a hunter. I tried. I went hunting and I shot myself on accident and knocked myself out. Yeah, true story. So, but the way I shot myself is not as dramatic as it sounds, but it is
like
awkward.
Through the foot or like,
no, what happened was, I was in a deer stand. I was a youth pastor and these guys had what are called tags, I guess, doe tags.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, come on, pastor, we don't have Sunday night church and we got to get rid of these tags. And I'm going to put you up. I said, well, I don't know how to hunt. No. It's like fish in a barrel. I'm going to put you up in this stand and you're going to get to, they'll come in and you'll see one and you just aim at their neck. So I'm sitting there and like 2.5 hours, there's nothing. And I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. Most boring sport. Is this a sport? Is sitting a sport? And then, sure enough, right before dusk, there's like 10 deer right in front of me. And I kind of did get excited. I saw where people were like, thrill of the hunt, you know? So I didn't have a regular size gun. I had a what's called a junior version of a rifle.
Okay.
Because that's all they had.
I think I see where this one's going.
Yeah, it was a little kid's gun. And nobody had taught me how to shoot. So I picked this rifle up. You know, it's like so small compared to me. And so I picked this little, you know, 12-year-old person's rifle up. And I'm trying to see the deer. And I didn't know much about scopes. And I couldn't see real well.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, I'll just put my eye closer to the scope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Put my eye right up on that scope. Boy, I could see the deer then. And then I shot, and I couldn't see anything.
Oh.
It's the only time in my life I've been knocked out, or like out cold. I just shot myself right in the eye with the scope. I mean, I pulled the trigger.
Give you that ring around your eye.
There was a ring of blood just around my eye. And I'm like passed out in the tree.
Literally just, gave yourself a black eye.
Blood coming down my face. And then, I don't think I was out long. I remember coming to, and there were no more deer there, and it was dark, and I climbed down and just was hazy and fuzzy, and, you know, there you go. And then the guys, so it was me, two chairman of our deacons, another deacon, and a son who was in my youth group, who was a senior. He actually was going to go on to play for the Cincinnati Cardinals, and he came up to me first. Because they were all spread across this property. And he goes, my dad wanted me to come talk to you first. And he started talking to me. He goes, what the heck? And he said a bad word. What the heck did you do to yourself? Like, man, y'all didn't tell me that you couldn't put your eye on the thing, you know.
As I shoot.
And then he goes, so right there, I'm being laughed at by one of my students. 10 o'clock at night in the middle of the woods. And he goes, my dad did something. It's not necessarily legal, which is why he wanted me to come tell you. Like, so the chairman deacon sent one of his students to come tell me.
That's so funny.
He had shot a bear, okay, which had been tearing down their deer feeders or whatever. And he got tired of dropping $100 every time. So he finally just shot the thing. And he said, so we got to bury it. So, and get rid of it. It's like a $20,000 fine and jail time or something. No, I swear to you, this story's worth taking up. It's part of Chasey Elvin's podcast time.
No, this is so good.
And so he puts me on the back of this four-wheeler. I'm bleeding. And we drive over to where this bear is and these two deacons in our church. And I'm standing there. And they are, as soon as I pull up, they don't need to know what happened. They can see the ring around
my eye. Right.
And they just start dying laughing at me. And I get out and I'm going, it's pretty funny, chuckles. And I said, what are we doing? And he goes, man, it's illegal to shoot a bear, but there's plenty of them. You know how people justify things?
Yeah.
There's plenty
there's
of them.
There's lots
and
of them.
And this one
fine.
Has torn down like 5 or 6 of my feeders.
Deserves to die.
And
that's
it's
right.
$100 every time. We're just purging it out of the woods a little bit. I said, oh, okay, it's purging. But it's illegal. And they're like, that's right. So we need to bury it. So we're out. I kid you not. It's 11 o'clock at night. It's like now I'm part of the mafia burying in a field outside of Las Vegas, a body. And so we're burying the bear, and we dig this hole. I'm big old bear. And
big old.
And we get him in there, but the hole's not quite deep enough.
Oh no.
So being the knucklehead goofball that I am, I swear guys, this happened. It's so dark. And we're just out there like, what are we doing? And so I was like, it didn't fit. I said, I can make it fit. And I jumped on it.
No.
It was dead. So what's the big deal? I jumped on it.
Disgusting.
Landed with my boots right on it. Okay. And then I hear this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. And I took off running through the pitch black dark. And I swear to you, I took off running through the woods. Ran smack into a tree and almost and fell flat on my face. And I was now bleeding on my head and I almost knocked myself out a second time. And off in the distance, all they're doing is laughing.
Oh.
And I'm like, what are you? I get up and I'm like, run. And they're like, no, he's dead, man. Like, but there was a little air left in his lungs. That growl was just the air in his lungs.
That is so
through.
Funny.
And I was like, I'm done. I'm just sitting
so
on the
fight
back
or
of the
flight.
Truck.
We know which one you are. No question.
When there's a bear involved,
man, I don't know that I would have gone back either.
Yeah, I know.
That's
so.
That's hilarious.
Anyways, that's so. I
amazing.
Enjoyed hunting too. I loved to go hunting when I was younger in my younger years.
Oh that my is gosh! Summary of the story: Brent loves hunting.
Yes, so
that is a great hobby that you have, Ben.
Yeah, that's right.
Glad you have that hobby, Ben. I'm sorry for that rabbit trail. Oh,
I've never heard amazing. Anything. I mean, the scope part.
Yeah, other people had to have done that, hopefully.
But
please tell me they have.
Yes, for
please
sure.
Tell me I'm not the only one. That is so funny.
Well, anyways, let's turn the corner, shall we?
Now that we've gotten to know Ben and Brent a little more.
That's good.
All right, let's talk about leadership a little bit. So, we're at SLU 101. You're about to speak to a room full of amazing students from all over the United States. And so I want to ask kind of because this is a leadership perspective series, just I know it's a bit of a broad question, but those are very helpful at times. When you think of a successful leader, what are some of the most important attributes of that leader?
Yeah, I think it's somebody that can build culture. Somebody who can not just see big vision, but also be able to turn that vision into execution, actionable steps, or a leader who is wise enough to say, I struggle with that part, so I need a team of people around me that can take big vision and move that into actionable steps, as well as somebody who is humble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody who is willing to... in those instances, let other people kind of
would you say
shine.
That's rare?
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody who is willing to say, man, as long as we reach that over there, I'm willing to shine the spotlight on whoever it takes,
right,
in order for us to reach that over there.
Mm. Yeah, well, and then on top of that, I guess the next question could be, what do you, along with humility, feel like is lacking in today's leaders?
Yeah, man. I think I'll say a couple things. One, we mentioned the humility piece. I think a group of people around that a leader would gather a group of people around them, not that work for them, but for relationship and for continuing in the leadership role. Leadership isn't easy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The vast majority of people, leadership is available to everyone.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of people just choose not to do it. And it's because it's not easy.
No.
And to stay in, it takes having a network of people for support, for relationship, for encouragement, for, hey, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me figure out how to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So I think those friendships are key to leadership. And I think many leaders try to Lone Ranger.
Yeah, this I was about thing. To say, yeah.
And outsource everything else.
Yeah.
Because I think that's because we live in such a brand society.
Who gets the credit? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody has to have their own brand, mm-hmm. their own platform, their own, you know, Jay-Z, I love what Jay-Z said years ago. Jay-Z said, I'm not a businessman. I'm a business.
Mm.
Yeah.
In other words, my name is my business. Now, that's good for Jay-Z.
Right.
That's true for Jay-Z.
Right.
But it seems like there's a lot of Jay-Z mentality out there where, even in ministry, where mm-hmm. people just want to show what I accomplished.
Yeah.
And I think that contributes to that. Peter Drucker, I want to emphasize something you said earlier. In one of his last conferences, anybody who studied leadership knows that voice, that author, Peter Drucker. And Drucker said, right before he passed away, he was at a conference doing a Q&A. And he lived into his 90s. And so he was sitting on the stage. He was kind of hunched over. You know, it was one of those deals where you're like, is he still there? Is he taking a nap? Is he, I mean, literally. And somebody asked a question, what's the most important thing about leadership? He lifted his head and he goes, who does what? And then he lowered his head again. But it goes, it's that execution thing. It's mm-hmm. like, who does what? Leadership is so much, is about get it done, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard work. It's responsibility. It's earning trust. That's what Drucker would say it is. It's not a glamorous thing. It's not mm-hmm. a romantic thing. It's not just vision. It's vision and execution.
Yeah.
I think vision without execution isn't leadership. It's just story time. And so anyways, I couldn't agree more with you. You're very goal-oriented, but you and I both know that we minister to some folks who feel a little bit imprisoned by goals. Like, no, I just want to be a free spirit and I just want to run the race and serve well and be available to take whatever opportunities in front of me.
Yeah.
So I don't need the goal thing. I'd like for you to speak to the importance of goals,
mm-hmm.
goal setting, and then maybe what are some of your goals to kind of illustrate that for us?
Yeah. So the importance of goals. I have always naturally kind of bent towards having goals as an Enneagram 3. Mm-hmm. It's like if there's not one out there, like, I don't know what I'm doing.
What am I doing? Yeah. No, literally. Yeah.
So that has always been there, but I don't think I really knew how
mm-hmm.
to do goals I worked with Eric Geiger.
Mm.
And he made goals make so much more sense to me. He wrapped those goals into annual reviews.
Mm-hmm.
He wrapped those goals into the framework of, like, your goals always have to be inside of the strategy that you're trying to accomplish and the values. And so he really made it clear to me, like, it's not just, oh, I want to accomplish, like, as a student pastor, like, I want to baptize this many teenagers. Well, why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm supposed to. Well, that causes you, that question, why, causes you to step back and say, okay, like, Why is our ministry here? Why do we exist? So he really used goals as a part of a greater framework for accomplishing stuff. And that really opened my eyes to, okay, like goals, this, they should all be challenging. They should be measurable. Mm-hmm. They should be public. Maybe, you know, not to at times a broader audience, but somebody should know about your goals.
Yeah.
For accountability, for celebration.
When you hit one.
And so those are some things that he kind of built into this framework. And again, they always need to align with the values and the strategy. Because if you have a goal that doesn't match up with your strategy, then you're going to be chasing two different things.
Right.
Right. So that's the way he set it out. For me, like organizationally, coming out of COVID, you know, you mentioned earlier, one of the things that we do is curriculum and Bible studies. Churches aren't meeting in groups.
Yeah.
They're not engaging with curriculum resources. So we saw a pretty big dip in that during the COVID year. So one of our organizational goals this year is to try to chew into that. And of course it's measurable for us and we track it and all of those things, but it's to try to get a little bit back to where we were in serving churches in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Another organizational goal that we have, I think, accomplished. We're still kind of in the end of it, but you mentioned earlier, like having a room of people.
Yeah.
We just launched camps a couple weeks ago. So we had a long goal of our COVID task force in creating a plan that would protect people and allow us to do camp and serve church as well. And our team, they just really executed well. And so that's a accomplished goal. And man, so far it's, the plan is working. So it's been good to see.
Praise God. Awesome. You know, I would just say to those of you listening that feel sometimes like goals kind of hamper you or they limit what you think you can do in life. Because I know I've been around the free-spirited type of person who is it's a beautiful thing to be around, and they just want to be available for opportunities, and they want to jump at everything, and they want to. I actually think goals and goal setting position you to say yes to the right opportunities. Mm-hmm. And if you do it right, it also gives you margin to be able to chase a couple of other things that may pop up because if you got the free spirit mindset, if that's how you've been kind of crafted and you're chasing everything, you're going to miss something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have goals that keep you focused on the things that align with your vision and strategy, then those goals rightly pursued provide the margin so that you can go, you know what? I also want to chase after this for a little while.
Right.
And so I think there's a benefit to that.
And I want to speak into that a little bit too and just ask you, Ben, I know that, you know, if we're trying to stay focused in our goals, what are some ways where when something else comes along that might not align with your strategy or your calling or your mission or your long-term vision, how do you stay focused? And maybe it's questions that you ask yourself about this certain thing that's popped up, or what are some ways that you stick to your goals without getting distracted along the way?
Yeah. So that, I think one of the most important things a leader can do is to be able to decipher and make a decision between what we need to do and what we don't need to do, between what is best and what is something that we can just do.
Yeah.
You do a lot of things, but what's going to be best? And I think that's where having a system of values really can take over. When a tough decision needs to be made, when there is gray in the decision, when you're unclear about, man, I could really go either way on this, then you can step back and look at your values, and they really create the experience that someone has when they interact with you as a person or your organization, and that can be your decision-making filter.
Yeah.
So I think that's, again, how all of those things fit together is really so important. So having that system of values that says, okay, when making a decision is tough, this is my filter. These are the statements written down on a piece of paper that I can say, does this thing that's just come up align with statement number one?
Mm-hmm.
Does it align with statement number two?
Yeah.
And so forth. So that's how I would approach that.
No, that's great.
And again, I think when there are other people involved, when it's just you,
yep.
the likelihood of me making a mistake just sitting in an office at home is really high. but when you surround yourself with other leaders, and there are moments when you can say, hey, let's talk about this together, then the right decision tends to be more clear. Now, at the end of the day, the leader still carries the responsibility.
Yeah.
And there are moments when the leader just knows, man, these three people think we should go this way. But as the leader, you just know we need to go that other direction.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where that courage steps in and says, okay, this is the direction we need to go. And you chart the course and after it.
Having the courage. No,
I'm reading Robert Iger's book right now, The Ride of a Lifetime. Iger was the recent 15-year president, CEO of the Disney company. And boy, a lot happened under his tenure. You know, he helped Disney acquire Pixar, Star Wars, Marvel. I mean, all that happened under Iger. And the first one was Pixar. And and Pixar and Disney, because of the former CEO, Michael Eisner, had just a terrible, terrible relationship. They had a business deal, a contract for like, I think it was like five films, and then the rights to sequels, but nothing past that. Which is kind of explains Toy Story 1, 2, 3, and 4. And so, but there was this moment where Iger came in and went, as the new, I mean, he was the first month of him being CEO. And he goes, this relationship is bad. It's not healthy. But they could fix everything about Disney animation. And they're better than we are right now at this thing. And so he just went and befriended Steve Jobs, which was not an easy task, according to what he wrote.
Or in Creativity Inc.
So just not the most... not the most warm human being from all recollections and primary sources. And then, but somehow befriended him and figured out a way within 6 months for them to agree for Disney to purchase Pixar. Now, the reason I bring it up is because every single member of the executive team there, the strategic team there, Disney Animation itself, nobody agreed with the decision. Like, nobody. It took, most of his board didn't agree with the decision at first, even though he had to get final board approval. It took him a while to convince them. But he just felt like, this is the win we need right now. This changes everything. It ups the standard of excellence in Disney Animation. They had several flops. And it's going to create a way of, I mean, because the movies feed the theme parks, feed everything. And so, but it's a recent historical example of this is a goal. This is a courageous decision. I'm out here on my own on this thing. And it went right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyways, but I thought, I just read that literally the other night. And I thought, what a great example of what you're talking about, Ben.
Yeah. You know, goals are interesting because I think leaders oftentimes focus on goals just organizationally and like, what do I want to accomplish here in my work, whatever that work might be. But I think just as important as that is goals for your own personal life.
Yeah.
And they, goals for a hobby, goals for what you want to accomplish, like goals for how do you want to engage with your family every month? Those kinds of things I think are important too. Again, that they're measurable and that you can, it gives you a track to run on. And Brent, you said a minute ago, it gives you, it doesn't take away your freedom. It gives you more margin to be able to do the things that you want to do when they,
it's like the snowball debt or the debt snowball.
That's right.
That Dave Ramsey talks about. It's the same idea. Whereas it's going to be hard work to get there for a little bit, but when you purposely make these decisions, do these things now, you have so much more margin later. Same budgeting, he talks about the same thing too. And so when you take the time to do it, it frees you up later just in order to keep developing yourself, keep growing, spending time as a family, whatever it may be. So that's really great.
We were having the same conversation the other day about this idea, but it was related to building systems and processes. So the execution side of leadership, that really leaders are supposed to get things done. Mm-hmm. If you're not, that's when new leaders are asked to replace you.
Yeah.
That's how that adds. It's just reality. We're talking about how systems and processes are really hard to implement at the beginning because mm-hmm. people naturally push against being
into a new system.
Uh-huh. Or these are the 10 steps that we follow every time we do this. But if you don't do that, then you just handle whatever comes up that day. And you never make progress towards the end goal.
Right.
And so systems and processes and execute, like, it's hard in the beginning, but if you just press through that difficulty, mm-hmm. then you do have margin to do the really cool thing that all of a sudden comes up and you can chase it down because your other work is in the natural, like, whirlwind of what you do every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting conversation.
It is an interesting conversation. And the other side of that coin is you got to have a system in place for the systems to challenge the process every once in a while. Because the reason people buck against systems is because they're so comfortable with a system that's been around so long it preceded their arrival.
Right.
And so they go, this is just who we are. You know, that's how traditionalism creeps in, is that we don't challenge the process of our own systems. And you know, at SLU, we try. We don't always bat 1,000, but we every August get away and have a couple of days where we kind of challenge the process of everything. Some years we do better than others as far as what we change or don't change. But one thing I'm convinced of, if we don't constantly, not every day, I mean annually, but if we're not consistently challenging the process, mm-hmm. the system will grow stale and irrelevant to accomplishing the mission.
Yep.
And so I love that, Ben. Well, we always try to end with a few rapid fire questions.
Yeah.
So let's
I like
let's
that
get
part.
Into
I
that.
Like this is the it's like it's almost like this, you need a buzzer for this part. But
yeah,
all right.
This might not be as much of a rapid fire, but I did want to ask you, just with this leadership perspective series, how can we look at leadership with a different perspective? And we can make it a rapid fire if it just wants to be quick, but what are some ways that we can look at leadership from a different perspective right now?
Yeah, I think one that I would kind of put on the table is think about the people that are going to be leading after you.
Mm.
And for like, take on the leadership perspective of not just how am I going to lead right now and how am I going to get these things done and how am I going to create culture and cast vision, but how am I going to train another 3, 4, 5 leaders that are going to be doing this when I'm gone. The mentoring side of leadership
that's great.
Is a perspective I'd offer that I think is not really considered a whole lot.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Okay, next question. What is the best book you've read in the last year?
Man, the best book I've read in the last year, it is the John Gwynne's Malice series. This is one of those things. I think that's what John Gwynne is, the author. He's a fantasy novel writer.
Mm-hmm.
So this was, you were probably expecting
amazing.
It to be like,
no, this is
no,
good.
I love this. This is
some
great.
Leadership thing. But
no,
so during COVID, man, I was reading and I was like, okay, there's a lot to figure out. And I just got overwhelmed with solve it leadership content.
Yeah.
Because there were so many voices saying so many things.
And so many people telling you this, you should be reading, you should be consuming right now, you have all this time. It was the same thing for me. I was like, I don't want to read. I don't want to take it. I read a lot of fiction because I was like, I'm tired.
Yeah. So it, that may not be the name of the series. That may be the name of it. It's a 4-book series, but it was absolutely amazing. It was a great mind break.
That's awesome.
I'm into like,
yeah,
magic and sword fighting and all of those kinds of things. I mean, like, I
love
this magic.
No, well, yeah, I mean, nobody can see it right now, but you showed up to this wearing a cloak. And so, I mean,
so we get it, Ben.
We asked you to set your wand on the chair and set the table because it made too much noise. But yeah, I get it. I get it.
So it's great.
That's awesome.
There's
okay,
a wizard in the SBC. All right, yes.
There may be more than one.
I should start a club. One of the ones I wanted to ask too is, what are you excited about this summer? Maybe it's something at work with your family.
Yeah. I am excited this summer. I mean, our family's going to the beach, and I'm super excited about that. And just kind of
30A, the mecca of beaches.
That's right. Just getting away.
Yeah.
We need it. I need it. And so I think
we didn't get to do it last year.
Yeah.
It's been a year. It's been since 19 since we got away to the beach like that.
Wow.
And it's so that's good. The other thing, work wise, is camps running.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty big like morale hit for our teams. You know, you guys do the same thing here with SLU. Like as soon as you wrap at the end of the summer, you start working in August for next summer.
Year. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you guys walked through the same experience of doing this whole, and there's a grieving that takes place when you don't get to execute all of the amazing things that you worked on. And then to think about like the ministry that didn't take place over that summer.
Yeah.
So I'm thrilled that
you
guys are back and meeting with people, and we're back and meeting with people.
No, I'm so excited for you guys.
That's awesome. Exhale kind of moment.
That's awesome. Well, this is the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah,
this has been so
fun.
I mean, Ben's literally about to go do a session, so can't wait to hear that. That is great. So thank you for being here.
Yeah.
And thank you guys for listening. We're here every Thursday, and we'll see you again next week.
See you next time.